Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So today, the Vesak, as you probably all very well aware, the commemoration of the birth and the awakening and the passing away of the Buddha. And so this is also a commemoration, a reflection, and a celebration. So you flag it, you name it. It's not just May 7th in Chile, West Sussex, which I want to live it is. And it could be Sunday, which it also is. That's one way of looking at it. And another way of looking at it is this is the day to commemorate the Buddha. And obviously in a Buddhist country like Thailand, it will be a public holiday. And people will be going, you know, stopping work and things like that. So how you mark time. Yeah, you know, we've got so used to time being marked by Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. What's that? These are the days of the old Nordic gods. Yeah. Days commemorating the moon and the sun and the gods of war. And what's that about? Doesn't mean anything, does it? And yet that's become established as the working week. So we kind of operate our time around the working week. You know, you've got weekday, weekend, and this is a weekend, you know. So we have things like that, and people believe in that, and it becomes real. Today is a Sunday. Oh, Sunday. And in, of course, in a Christian country, or what was a Christian country, Sunday, day of rest or religion or something or the other, well, you're not working. Mark it. What is it actually? Just another series of experiences flowing through the mind, isn't it? You can flag it, you can frame it in a certain way that highlights certain qualities. And so here, you know, this is what you can do with your mind. You can decide how you look at things. And just a thing like that is a recognition of a very powerful faculty of mind. You can look at it this way, you look at it that way. And this is just a small incident, calling it Vesak Buddha Day. It means you focus on qualities of awakening, qualities of meaning, value, what's really important for you, lifelong meaning, not just this week, but for life or for a year or for maybe for many lives. Or globally even, you know, Buddhists all over the world will be commemorating a Vesak. Some hold it on different days because we do it on a Sunday because that makes it easiest for people who are operating on this particular calendar. But this such a thing occurs that people do things that are outside the ordinary functional working world mode into something that's encouraging, at least pausing, stopping, taking stock, reflecting, where are we going, what's all this about, what are my values, what's meaningful. And Buddha, awakening, and all the facets of that, awakening as awakening to moral intelligence, awakening to compassion and sympathy, awakening to deep understanding. And such like that, you know, waking them up, bringing them awake. If you don't wake them up, they tend to become sleepy, dormant. That which you use most is what gets the most airtime. That's the one that gets most exercise. Yeah. So if you, without necessarily, you know, committing oneself to non-morality and non-awakening, just by not remembering it often enough, it tends to get kind of go underneath other features of one's life. You know, the income, the job, the school, the promotion, the whatever, you know. domestic issues, things breaking down. You can live a whole life just absorbed into the functionality of it, with all its temporary uplifts and sags and breakdowns and trying again. And you spend a whole life doing that. Where did that go? What was all that about? Yeah, it's so intense when you're in it, struggling in it, working in it, putting all your effort into it, and then at the end of it, what do you got? Yeah. Enough to keep going, but where are you going? Yeah, and why? And we get into this kind of momentum, moving along. And that becomes the norm. That's the only thing a human being can do. If you're not doing that, something's going wrong. If you're not working, doing this and that, yeah, having a mortgage, doing these kind of things, somehow you're misfitting, you're not fitting in, there's something going wrong, you haven't made it. That's what being a human being was about, was to get a job. I remember when I was in my teens studying school and I was looking ahead at what do you get out of this? I said, well, you get a job. So what's that about? Because every day my dad would come home from work completely exhausted, sit in the chair, fall asleep because he was so exhausted. Mum would bring his dinner along, sit down, have some dinner, and he'd lie back, fall asleep. And next morning he was off early before I even got up to go to school. You do that 5 or 6 days a week, and this is good. It's got a job, and it was good because that meant there was something to go, food to go on the table. If he hadn't had a job, we'd have been really stuck. But he spent so much time just doing that. He'd left school when he was 14, working. So then when I wanted to get a job. Is that it? And then, what do you get out of it? So I had a job for a while, you needed some money, so I got a job. What meant you got some money on Friday night. And then by Monday you spent most of it spending the money to get over the effects of working all week. That's it, is it? This goes on until you're, 65 or something. That it? That's what it's about. I don't get that, Is that all? So I wasn't particularly keen on following that. Didn't know what else to do, but didn't see me going very far. So you start to get the question, what's this all about, this human thing that we've all been kind of educated into? This is life. Is that it? That it? Can't imagine you're born in order to get a job. And what do you take with you when you go? So when you widen the lens a little bit and look more broadly at life, you start to think, well, there's got to be something about meaning, value, purpose, aim, something that's going to really stay within you, carry you on. Maybe love, companionship, something you're interested in, right? Something like that. So certainly for myself, I was just pausing, and I spent some time at university because that's what you did. If you got a good enough school results, go to university, get a degree, and then you think, now what? I don't know. Just get another degree, something else. So I just pause. I don't know. I think I better just go and look around the world. So I went to India, and because I was looking for something that would give me a deeper meaning. So in those days, there's lots of interest gradually creeping in about the understanding of the East, of Asia. And India was a very powerful culture. So I went to India looking for something there. Didn't quite work. Ended up in Thailand, meditation class, go to that. Oh, meditation. Oh. Something can watch your mind. Something can watch, witness my mind. What's that? I can witness my mind. I can, what's that? How can I witness, which am I, my mind or the witness or what? So, more meditation. That ability we have to lift from our thoughts, what we're engrossed in, our activities, our actions, our mental actions, our emotions. Something that can lift from that and go, look at that. You know, something could do that. That's different from the onwards movement. It's not an onwards movement. It's a kind of upwards or opening movement, isn't it? Oh, this. What's this? So, you know, that in a way to me is the very essence of the initiation into Dhamma, into the quality of the Buddha. And, you know, on a worldly level, it seemed pretty nothing special. And I went to a monastery in Thailand and spent some time there, and, you know, wasting my life, sitting around sweating in a monastery in Thailand, wasting my time. Could have got a good job, could have got a mortgage, could have got a bank account, could have got, wasting my life. Starting to feel better about it. And then somewhere in that, you had to ask my parents for their permission to go forth. And my father, he said, well, son, he said, he wrote this letter, he said, well, I've spent all my life working since I was 14. I'm still working. I'm 66, 67. I'm tired of working. I can't do anything but work. If you can go through this life without doing it, go right ahead. I think you've got the right idea. In fact, I want to come out and learn some of this stuff you're doing. But unfortunately, then he had a heart attack. Bomb. That was the end of that. So he was actually on the verge of coming out so I was very touched by both his honesty and his ability to himself, you know, step back and look at what he was going, and also still keen to be able to learn. You know, that was beautiful. And yet, you know, there I was, kind of good degree, you know, wasting my life. I think, well, I'm really glad I've wasted my life for the last 50 odd years. Because the results of wasting one's life have seemed pretty good to me. You know, you live with good people, no worries, no pressures. You know, obviously there are bits and pieces of things you've got to deal with, but basically getting this sense of something growing constantly, steadily within, a sense of contentment and blamelessness and fearlessness and clarity and orientation. Yeah. And this is because of connecting to the teaching and the example of the Buddha. Yeah. Imagine his own way, you know, the Buddha, he was the son of a local prince. So the idea was he'd become the next king. Yeah. And instead he went and wasted his life. He didn't take up a position, wasted his life, went off living in a jungle with grubby old robes, sitting under a tree doing nothing, wasting his life. And thank goodness he did. Because imagine if he'd have taken up his father's option, you know, probably nobody even remembered him. Complete, you know, some minor king of a minor principality in India, nothing. But since he wasted his life, he's the most powerful figure in human history, in my opinion, in terms of just deep influence that crosses the cultures. It's always the same, steady, same orientation. You can pick it up now. You know, it hasn't aged, the same orientation. Understand what it is that causes you suffering. Make yourself strong enough, self-reliant by being blameless, by having respect for yourself. Have respect for yourself through developing integrity, morality, get the heart to be big, grand, generous through developing goodwill, compassion, generosity, kindness. These things will not let you down. This is really what you were here for as a human being. He told the truth. That this is what you were born for. It wasn't, you know, to get a job. I mean, you know, you get a job if you need to, but that's not the point. This is the real point of being human beings, to develop this. And if you, the more your time and energy you can put into that, the better the results are going to be. And it's not so remote, you know. So here I'm living as a Buddhist monk, but everybody can develop morality, everybody can develop generosity, everybody can develop kindness. But most of us, and particularly people living in the circumstances of the world, you just need to keep remembering and aligning yourself to that, because this is very powerful hypnotic current that's that you're saturated in sports and politics and, you know, gossip and crossword puzzles and TV and stuff. You know, it's just going nowhere. And, you know, just to pull out of that and recognize it's the benefit of it. It's not what you're here for. It's that is really wasting something beautiful and precious that you all have. This citta, this heart, this mind, this awareness. And it begins with that ability to step back, to lift off, I say, and most of us are going to need some definite practice, some definite, you know, thing to do to get us to do it. A stop, you know, meditation, you can call it meditation, recollection, where you say, no, enough of the actions going forward now, my mental actions are going to be about how do I open, how do I let go, how do I oversee, how do I determine, how do I re-establish proper orientation. And this is, you know, not a small matter. So this isn't really just a kind of a, you know, religious belief or a interesting exercise to make your mind calmer. It's about orientation and orientation in human life. If you, like we are, like we're like ships in an ocean with these tremendous currents flowing in it. They're flowing around us and they're flowing within us. It's currents to do with craving, needing, wanting, hungering after sense pleasures or prestige or, you know, and these things capture us. They're around us and we get captured by them. We're very seducible by sights and sounds that seem interesting and so forth, and beautiful new things. We're very easily seduced into, oh yeah, either follow it, or you wish you could. I'd be really happy if I could do this, or if I could get one of those, or if I looked like this. Yeah. People want to look attractive. You know, we spend a lot of time making ourselves look attractive or trying to look attractive. And most people feel they don't look attractive or attractive enough. They're too fat, too old, too stumpy, too skinny, bulge in the wrong places, don't bulge enough in the right places. Whatever it is, you know, there's something wrong. They're not attractive enough. What do you want to be attractive for? Whatever that is, you know, because it changes, doesn't it? You get some model up on a screen, doesn't really exist anyway, because they just take a photograph and get the you know, fix it up, who looks like this maybe for a few seconds with the right lighting, and then, oh, that's what it is now, and you're not it. Yeah. You know? It's kind of an amazing amount of money and energy goes into just trying to look like something. And you realize whatever you look like, you know, you're inside that. You can't even see it. Because it's for everybody. It's not for you, it's for everybody else. I mean, you can't, when you're living inside this thing, well, you can't really see. It's not even your topic. But the theme is, if you look like the right way, then the right kind of people will come to you. It's in theory. But, you know, I don't know about that. You know, you want people who are attracted to you, to what you look like. How good's that? How long are you going to make yourself keep looking like that? If that's what counts in human contact, it's pretty superficial, isn't it? So you don't really want to attract people who are interested in what you look like. You want to find yourself inclining towards people who value you, no matter what you look like. That's going to change. Yeah. And so you start to turn things upside down. And through this ability to find the true orientation. Turn things upside down. Because it's the Buddha, from the Buddha's point of view, once he'd stepped out into that domain of what we call non-attachment or viveka, dispassion, contemplation, suddenly he realized things are turned upside down. You know, they call them inversions. It says people see that which is innately not satisfying, not able to satisfy. They see it as possibly satisfying. Yeah. You know, so the craving comes in. We imagine that sight, sound, touch, winning, excitement could be satisfying. But it doesn't. It can't be. Otherwise, we've all had some of it. And it wasn't satisfying. Otherwise, you wouldn't want any more, would you? That's definitely not the message of the commercial world, like, enough. Definitely not. You know, last year's enough, yesterday's enough isn't enough today. Buy another one. So that's the kind of the message, the inverted message of the material world, sensory world, that one could find satisfaction in it. And nobody does. And yet, we still think if you just tweaked it enough, or pushed it enough, or held it long enough, or got another one, it would be. And this isn't even occurring at the level of thought. This is occurring at a kind of fundamental inclination. And he's saying, well, no, actually, if you look at it the right way, you see, well, that's not satisfying. And someone who hasn't practiced or hasn't entered that contemplative space, this sounds really miserable. To say, you know, things are unsatisfactory. But from the contemplative state, it says that is unsatisfactory because this feels contented. This heart, this citta. This citta is Buddha. This citta is the awakening potential, and the full fruition of it is called Buddha. It says, one becomes a Buddha through purification of mind. This is the saying in the suttas. Through purifying the mind, one is called Buddha. So Buddha isn't particularly a person. It's a state of the complete awakening fruition of mind, by which we mean not just thinking mind, but awareness, spirit, heart, this inner quality, subjective quality of awareness and presence. When that's completely borne fruit, completely opened up, strong, resolute, and you abide in it, that is deeply satisfying. Therefore, from that position, you can say, oh, no, that's not. No. Well, don't do that. You know, you turn things back the right way. And, you know, the whole process is of practice is one where you're entering that contemplative space and meeting the challenge of it, because naturally, as you start to shift, there's all sorts of, you know, pulls, counterpulls, and challenges, and, you know, like a reorientation. means you feel quite disoriented at first as you start to let go of things. So if this is the, you know, think for a start it's slower. The attemptive domain is much, doesn't run like the world does. The world runs faster and faster if you notice. It speeds up. The ordinary world now, you know, 10 seconds, 5 seconds, split seconds, hurry up, faster, faster. The contemplative world is just much slower. It's the world that the world of the heartbeat, the world of an in-breath, the time of the in-breath and out-breath, that kind of time span is just slowly, steadily breathing in and breathing out. It doesn't move in that time-bound way. It's called timeless. It doesn't tick. It doesn't rush forward. It's actually just staying in the same place and getting the mind to come back to that steadiness, that groundedness, instead of this rushing forward, searching for immediate hits, immediate answers, forming conclusions, just to get the mind to come back and sit down in presence. And time is not here. It doesn't work like that. There's a rhythm, simple rhythm, body rhythm, breathing in, breathing out. And it's a very nice way to, in a way, to help to shift the mind from its rushing on into sitting here. And you sit here and things begin to open up. The agitation begins to open up, gets very agitated, then it begins to shift and relax. It's like you're coming through waves of shock that have been established by the speed of the world and the hit, you know, the sensory rush of it. When you come out of that, there's this kind of ricochet effect that you have to bear with. Feeling groggy, feeling sleepy, feeling speedy. You're breathing in, breathing out, just bringing the mind back home to where it's not running forward or running back or rigid. It's just opening like a flower. And you can begin to sense within that mind right now, right here, not through going forward, not through moving back, not through holding on, within this mind right here, right now, beautiful things start to become evident. Quality of contentment, quality of peace, quality of warmth, warm-heartedness. And these are not things you have to add. It's rather like, you know, like, call it rewilding the mind. If you begin to take out all the industrialized wreckage from your mind and just leave it be, green stuff starts growing by itself. Because our citta is natural, Dhamma is nature, and it operates in the same way. If you don't pollute it, if you don't try to make it into some efficient machine, it will bring forth natural qualities of warmth and calm and steadiness. And you begin to, sleep comes out your eyes. You think, oh my goodness. Wow. This is what being a human being is about. This. This is the most important thing, because this is where I start to feel good right now. And I start to be able to see clearly, no, I don't want that. This attitude isn't worthy of me. This mental state don't give it any energy. And so you start to, nature starts to look after itself. Things that are not in line with Buddha nature don't get fed, and they just part, they begin to die out. And what is left is something quite bright and beautiful. So when we reflect on the Buddha, this is someone who is called the Sukhato. Got a number of epithets. Bhagavan means the one who is rich, full of treasure, full of good fortune. Bhagavan has this blessed, rich quality to it. It means very full, arahant, very pure, worthy, that which you can really, this is solid gold. Arahant, Samma Sambuddho, awakened in himself. It means it's not through adding something. It's not through adopting something. It's just within itself, citta wakes up within itself. Not through adopting something, not through believing something, not through learning something, but just by knowing itself, Samma Sambuddho, completely, fully self-awakened. That's, you know, and this is what Buddha is. And Buddha is the full potential of citta, of your heart, mind, awakened by itself. There's nothing you have to be or become. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with you. You're not lacking in something. You're just out of alignment. That's the problem. It's just coming into alignment and giving it time to grow, samas to fully blossom. Sukhato is the nature of the Buddha. Vijacharana Sampanno is the one who is completed in terms of understanding and conduct. It's the two features. Their understanding is internal, their conduct is external. And they've crafted those. There's been a certain clear cultivation of those, how to properly manage their own body-mind, this body-mind thing that we live with its energies and speech, and so how to properly manage that, how to act in accordance with that. Sukhato, the one who has gone the good way, fully gone the good way. In other words, that which is good, they've completed it. They've gone to the fullness of it. The fullness of the good fortune. Sukhato. So these are words that you can take one at a time and reflect on them. You know, they're not easy words, actually. They don't really have exact English words that fit them. Su is good, or wise, or complete, or happy, or well. Gato, gone. Well gone? What's that mean? It means someone who has completely gone, you know, completely gone to the fullness of goodness. Sugato. Look, Avidu, the one who sees the world. Not one who hasn't seen the world, but seen it almost like from 5 miles up. You know, instead of being in it all, in a little patch, you know, they've actually lifted. They see the whole thing. Oh, that's what it is. People are born, people die, people are happy, people are sad, people crave, people want, people fear, people do good deeds, people do bad deeds, people have aspirations, people have confusions. They've seen the whole thing. This is what it is, the human thing. Yeah, I've understood this. I've understood what it is that makes it that way. What makes it problematic? What makes it beautiful? Yeah, I've seen these things. Having seen these things, there's a possibility of teaching. Yeah. Because one has fully seen. It's not just working with some theory or some ideology. Because he has fully seen what arises for humans in their world, for good and for bad. The results of it, for good and for bad. The ways to cultivate the good and relinquish the bad. He's seen it all. Therefore, he is someone who is a teacher, someone who can train and teach those who wish to be trained. Nice. You know, it's a nice thing to remember. If you don't want it, it isn't going to work. The Buddha's not there to ram something down your throat. Saying, if you want to learn, there's a possibility. If you're not, there is no possibility. It's that open. There's no pressure. And that's what makes it, the qualities of the Dhamma, that which encourages you. Say, yeah, there's something good here, but it's up to you. Take a little bit, see where it goes. Just take a little bit and see if it works. Free offer. Yeah. Come back next week, you want another hit. It's always free. Yeah, and it's always never going to be something other than just helping you to gain your authority, your orientation in your life. It's not anything else. It's not about belonging to a club. You know, it's about giving you the possibility to find your authority, your orientation, your good way, your fullness, your blossoming. And this is an amazing, incomparable gift, the gift of Dhamma. Yeah. So we reflect on it. And reflect means you don't just run through a few words, you pause. What does that mean to you? If you just take some of these words and work with them and unpick them and massage them and sit with it and dwell upon it, how does that touch you? I think it touches me as just an incredible, magnificent thing for somebody to do and for somebody to offer it for nothing. No, you know, you have to, no payment is required. Buddha is not asking for anything back. That's, and you see, that's not just the person, that's the nature of the awakened mind that we all have potential for. And when you contemplate, you also recognize, you know, a quality like giving, isn't it really the best when you just give and you don't mind whether, you know, you're not asking for anything back? Isn't that the best? Where you just think, just for, you feel the fullness of it. You know? And in, there's no sort of sense of, well, you know. So, this is, you know, the ongoing generosity of heart. So none of these are really that difficult concepts. They're very basic human values that we need to orient to and remember and allow to come into fullness. So there is no holding back and no wanting back and no trying to find something for me, because it doesn't even make you feel good. It's much better just to bring it out, because then you're realizing the most important thing, which nobody else can give you. You can't get from anywhere else. You don't need from anywhere else, because it's within yourself. Awakening. And this is the, this is what we need to, or we're asked to remember in terms of occasions like this. We're encouraged to remember occasions like this, because this is a very different model from the model of the world, which is pay. You give me this, what am I getting back? What do you want out of me? Yeah. That kind of thing. Being comparing. I don't want that one, I want that one. You know? Doesn't work like that. It's no, there's no strings attached. Yeah. And this is certainly what this monastery is about. You know, it is what it is. It's an offering. We make a point of keeping it open, and clearly we have a limit in terms of rooms you can put people in, but people always come and visit, stay for a while, and you just get whatever else you're getting. You share the food, you share the place, you share the routines, you share the work, you share the, you're just there. The place is there. We look after the foxes and the rabbits and the birds and the plants and the trees, and we keep the door open. You notice that there's no gate. Go down the road, you see most houses got gates, and we don't have a gate on our front drive. It means just any time, come in. We don't have a lock on the door. Any time you want to come and sit down. Even the house, it's got a lock, we never use the lock. The door's always open. You come in, sit down. Because so much has been given, surely it is up to us to give back. That's my feeling. So much has been given by the Buddha and by the Sangha of all those Buddha's disciples over the thousands of years, who have kept this thing alive, not just as an idea, but as a living practice, as a culture, as material goods, you know, over thousands of years through Asia, and brought it here with no strings attached, just there you go. And, well, when you're given so much, how can you not give back? You know, how can you not give everything you have? Because that's the human possibility. Yeah. That's the human point. When it starts and people pick it up, you realize, yeah, you can live together, you can work together. And it's enough. You get enough. Because you really don't need that much as a human being. You know? And that's another thing to remember. Because you don't get that message either. You get the continual message you need more, and a new one, and another one, and an improved one, and a better one, and more of these, and five of these, and one for spare, and one for later on, and a bit for when. No, you don't. You're a human being. Human beings don't need that much, because you have this massive resource in your own mind. And if you focus more on that, your needs, material needs, just start to go down. Start to drop by themselves. So this is giving us back our authority, our freedom, our dignity, our own time, our own space, our own hearts. Surely this is an enormous occasion for celebration. And if we just even arrive at that kind of understanding and that orientation, and you stay with it, you realize, well, there's only one way that goes. Yeah, if it goes anywhere, if you know, it goes deeper. If you stay with it and you keep following it, it's bound to go deeper. And you never know when you're finished, but you find out. Just keep going deeper and let the process unfold. So that's our life and our practice and what we welcome you into. And we'd really love you to be able to participate when you come here or when you go home. Just keep it going wherever you go. So, offer this for your reflection today.
Handamayan dhamma ovadagata sadhukaranga dhamma se sadhu sadhu sadhu.